to be with William Summers, Second Director of the Citizens Council. March 29th, 1974.
About the last 5 days of Mississippi, interviewing Lieutenant Governor, Treasurer, Legislators, reporters, and a whole lot of other people.
Well, I'm sure you're replete with knowledge.
Maybe.
What do you see as a major change in Mississippi politics over the last 25 years, Mr. Simmons?
I've been so close to it, I haven't thought about it. There have been a great many changes. Of course, one of the most significant changes has been the increased black registration of voters. And I think that's brought about a consequent change in attitude of some of the state leaders.
The Citizens Council in Mississippi is very active in the private school movement, as I understand.
Yes.
And actually, am I correct, they sponsor schools?
Well, we're pretty close to it. The relationship actually is this. The Citizens Council advocated private schools as a means of dealing with the results of the integration of public schools that occurred 10 years after the Brown decision.
Right.
Really following on the passage of the Civil Rights Act. And of course, everyone knew that it was impossible to operate private schools. You know, it was common knowledge, it just couldn't be done. That is, except for old line expensive schools with tuition in the neighborhood of, say, $2,000 a year up. And the Citizens Council here in Jackson organized an experimental school to try to determine if it was economically feasible to operate a school on different economic principles than that followed by an exclusive school. And really from that, I think, along with Prince Edward Academy in Farmville, Virginia, which was the first large private school established of this nature, that some encouragement was offered to the private school movement. A lot of operating experience was gained and was shared with other interested groups. As the need for private schools increased, many of the local citizens' councils in towns in the Deep South then turned their principal activities toward the organization of private schools. Along with that, here in Jackson, we organized the Council School Foundation. That's closely related to the Jackson Citizens Council. And the Council School Foundation itself operates some 10 schools in this area, in Vicksburg and Natchez.
How about the other private schools in the state? Is there a relationship between them and the council?
There's not a direct relationship, no. I'd say the principal role of the Citizens Council was several years ago in offering operating information and primarily sharing some of the things that it learned from its experimental schools that differed in many ways from the type of public school operation that people had been accustomed to. And as I mentioned, many of the schools that now exist were organized by local Citizens Council members. But there is not any direct official connection.
Is there any sort of working relationship, formal or informal, between the private schools that have developed in Mississippi and those in other states?
Yes, there is.
How many schools southwide would you say are involved in this more or less informal network? Is this an informal relationship?
It has some elements of both formal and informal. The formal structure is the Southern Independent School Association that is comprised of private school associations in six states. There are no schools themselves that have direct membership. It's an association of associations. And they cooperate primarily on matters of general interest to all private schools. There is some informal give and take in that committees have been set up, for example, on the writing of textbooks. Committees have been set up on standards, teacher standards. We engaged in a lawsuit right now. That's one of the things that delayed me from seeing the gentleman, because we're set for oral argument Tuesday in Richmond. There's been a certain amount of...
What is the lawsuit?
Interstate interscholastic competition, football games, that sort of thing.
The six states are what?
They're Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana.
Do you think that will expand any of the other states?
Two other states are included, or other schools in two other states are included, Arkansas and Tennessee. But they are included by virtue of their membership in the Mississippi Private School Association. Frankly, I don't think it will spread beyond these states. I don't see any indication at this point that it will.
What has been the pattern of private school growth in this state since the first one was formed?
Well, the pattern was extremely rapid about 4 years ago, and it has leveled off. And as far as I know, there has been no sudden spurt comparable to that followed, for example, the court order in schools here in Jackson. Probably Jackson and Memphis are the two largest towns with real extensive private school systems. I myself am not personally knowledgeable about Memphis, because I haven't been there since the expansion, but my impression is that there are about 10,000 children in private schools in Memphis, and all of that is a result of the last year and a half.
But here it's leveled off.
Here it's leveled off.
You anticipate it's going to stay at that level? It's going to stay the same, or is it going to drop?
It all depends on outside influences. There will probably be an expansion of private school enrollment here, depending on a couple of events that are in the future. One would be the expansion of the city limits to take in, as I recall, about 9 county schools that are virtually totally segregated. Jackson is under a court order, and the Hinds County schools are not. It's pending. Hasn't been pushed. I think it's been stalled for 2 or 3 years. And if and when the city limits are expanded, then I think that it will mean a radical and massive integration of about 9 schools, 6 of them black, 3 white. I don't think there's any integration. That will, I think, undoubtedly cause an increase in enrollment. Another is if the Hinds County case ever gets heard and decided, and the public schools in Clinton get affected, then I think that will cause an increase in enrollment. Aside from that, the enrollment in our schools, which the only ones with which I'm intimately familiar, is pretty stable. It's leveled off at about 5,000 children. And about the only changes we have are from people moving from Jackson or coming in. Our largest source of new students now, aside from occasional students who involve, say, an unpleasant physical incident in public schools, are newcomers.
What's the average tuition?
In our schools, there's a great range of tuition depending on grade and number of children in the family, but the average overall at this point is slightly under $50 a month per child.
Are any of your schools integrated?
No.
Do they have or not have the tax-exempt status?
Ours do not.
What was your reaction to that IRS order?
Well, I thought it was atrocious.
Were you disappointed?
Well, it's not a matter of being disappointed or not disappointed. I was not altogether surprised. My personal impression is that the decision came right out of the White House, like some other things that have come out of the White House. But I'm satisfied that the decision was made there to change the position of the Justice Department, which originally defended the suit. I don't know how familiar you are with this situation, but most of the schools, in fact, all the schools involved, to my knowledge, including the Council School Foundation, had been granted tax exemption. Were not been granted because it's something you're entitled to by the law. But the IRS had ruled that we had tax exemptions. I recall it was in December of 1964. And the tax exemption was rescinded in September 1970 when the suit, the Green case, was filed, and filed, of course, not against the schools, but against the Director of Internal Revenue. The Justice Department defended the case, which was its obligation to do. After the case was halfway through trial court, I gave myself a rather extensive deposition. The Justice Department reversed its position, and instead of defending the case and agreed with the plaintiffs on some kind of settlement, which amounted to their rescinding tax exemption of the schools involved. As I recall, eventually was dismissed on the ground that the relief sought for had been granted.
Am I correct that at one time the Citizens Council got direct subsidy from the state?
No, that's not correct. The Citizens Council at one time had a separate organization entitled Citizens Council Forum. Produced television and radio programs, and that received grants from the State Sovereignty Commission for the production of TV and radio programs, and that was for the use to which it was put. They operated for a period of several years, as I recall, beginning about 57 or 8, and extending I forget what year we stopped, but election is it lasted 5 or 6 years.
Today, the basic function and purpose of the council is to encourage the growth of these private schools and to keep them in.
That's one, yes.
If you think back to when the council was formed, has the function changed materially?
Yes, it has.
How have they changed?
Well, it's changed primarily in this respect. I wouldn't say the objectives have changed, but the methods and tactics have changed due to changing circumstances. For about the first 10 years of its existence, the primary mission of the Citizens Council was to protect as far as possible the public schools and to try to encourage the state governments to bring their power to bear in counteracting what we thought was a disastrous decision of the court in this Brown case, which opened up a whole Pandora's box. This, I think, was fairly successful in organizing public sentiment against massive integration. Then the passage of the Civil Rights Act in 1964, I think, changed
so
the whole situation.
So from 1954 to 64, that was the principal objective or stratagem.
Right.
And then in 64 it changed.
In 64 it changed and went primarily to preoccupation with private schools and also on the local level among local citizens' councils, encouraging white voter registration drives as a political counteraction to the black registration drives.
And that's been the principal concern since 1964.
And that would be true particularly in counties with heavy black majorities.
Were you in this position in the latter 60s?
In
Mississippi? In the Citizens Council, did you hold this position?
Well, I've been active in it almost since it started, yes.
Thinking back in those years, say between 1964 and 1970, on the possibility of massive integration, did you anticipate that that integration would be accomplished as fairly peaceably as it was? In other words, did you expect a different kind of reaction?
I'm not sure exactly what I expected.
Well, in terms of the operation of the council, it seemed to me that if you expected massive resistance to it, it would have increased the enrollment in the private schools steadily, rather than just a spurt and then a leveling off.
Well, the spurt occurs when the massive integration of the public schools occur.
Right.
And you must bear in mind that the integration in the public schools here in Jackson even, which is under court order, is by no means level. It's very heavy in some schools and less in others, depending on neighborhood, although the school districts have been gerrymandered in order to try to achieve certain racial quotas, which incidentally is against the law. But nevertheless, that has been done. And we have seen some change in the city as the racial composition of certain public schools changes. For example, a couple of years ago, there was an attempted resegregation of Callaway School in North Jackson. They gained a certain amount of white students who have since kind of drifted away. There has been substantial resegregation in certain elementary schools in Southwest Jackson. That's had some effect. But it's...
No, I guess I didn't make my point clear. About 7% of the students are now in private schools. Is that
about what?
7%, is that correct, in the state?
I presume that's correct. I thought it was a little higher. I thought it was about 10.
Okay. My question was, looking back to the 60s, did you see when this movement first started that it would increase to a much higher level or a much higher percentage than it is now?
That the enrollment in private schools?
Right. That as the integration
was accomplished, that the, there'd be kind of a one-to-one relationship between that and the enrollment in the private schools.
Well, I think there has been, allowing for differences in percentages. For example, there are a good many counties in the state where the percentage of blacks is low. There has been very little movement toward private schools, but I think if you look at a map and see the private schools plotted, they would be heaviest where they, in the counties with the heaviest black population. But answering your question in more general terms, yes, I was a little surprised that people and parents have accepted some of the conditions that their children are exposed to. I've been quite surprised.
How do you explain that?
It's difficult to explain. I have voiced some explanations to colleagues. It might sound a little irreverent. Perhaps shouldn't be appropriate to repeat it here, but I can speculate a little bit, but that's all it would be. I've noticed a difference in the class reaction. It's puzzled me a little bit. For example, people in this state whom you would ordinarily think of as tending to be liberal or moderate.
You're talking about social class?
Right. And to a certain extent of political ideology, if you can call such pale thought processes as ideology, will go to private schools much more quickly than the so-called redneck, which is right interesting.
Is that a reflection upon economics?
I don't think so.
But it's a reversal of what the youth thought was going to happen.
It's a reversal of what one would logically think would happen. And the first experience that I had with this was when we expanded it so rapidly here in Jackson. See, our schools jumped from, and the winter of 69-70, we had an enrollment, total enrollment of about 500, and in 2 weeks' time, we jumped to 3,000. Then the next fall, jumped to 5,000. Well, among the most vociferous and articulate of those who wanted a place for their children were many people I knew who, in 64 and 65, when the Civil Rights Act was passed and brought about a certain change in the general atmosphere, would not be particularly cordial socially. They suddenly became old buddies, old schoolmates. Please, for God's sake, make a place for my child. I'll give you anything to get at the head of the list. Make a contribution. Many who frankly surprised me. Now, at the same time, here in this city in particular, we've had an enrollment of all economic classes in the schools, and patrons who probably as a group pay the most promptly are those who would be near the lower end of the economic scale. But in areas that have not responded to private schools in the way you mentioned, would be some rural, what someone from Charlotte might call redneck counties, or in Georgia you'd call them wool hat counties. And I explain it to myself in this manner. I don't know whether I'm correct or not, but there may be some truth in it, that the more whites, if you can call them that, physically are a little bit intimidated by blacks and by close contact with them. The rural white is not. You know, he's more intimately, and you know, this is something you, I mean, you're both Southerners, aren't you?
I am.
You're not. Where's your home?
Well, I am now. I wasn't in Michigan.
Well,
I went through the private school system.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you're familiar with the fact that in the South, this is something that's always puzzled people who are not acquainted with the South, that there is a lot more give and take between black and white than there is in the North. It's just more personal conversation and dealing back and forth. And whites here, by and large, are not afraid of blacks. In the North, they're terrified of them, and probably with very good reason. But I think this may have something to do with it, that the whites here are not all that, you know, it's not all that unusual to be around them and talk with them, and they're not afraid of them. So I think that that may be some explanation.
So it's a function of class, and you also said earlier of people moving in. In other words, the people who move in from, say, the North,
yes,
who are more apt to send their yes. children to private school.
We have had many people come here, well, primarily with industries moving in or with utilities, who will come in and say, my God, I never saw anything like this before, when they go to one of the public schools. I said, well, we never had anything like this in Indianapolis or Chicago or Louisville or wherever they came from. And we're at our side. That's a typical reaction.
What are they meaning when they say they've never seen anything like this before?
Well, I mean the number of blacks in school. That's what they mean. Well, you can see across the street.
Looking ahead 10 years, do you see Mississippi becoming pretty much a racially integrated society or not?
Well, it's a multiracial society, a biracial society in effect now. It's changed somewhat. I think the change has been probably more superficial than it has otherwise. I think what's very likely to happen, again, bearing in mind the natural caution everyone feels when talking about 10 years from now, because things always happen that we don't foresee that can change events. But I think that the attitude of the South, white Southerners, has changed in this respect. I think there is more integration and more hostility. I think there's more racial hostility than there has been in the past. I think the young Southerners are becoming more like young Northerners, in that they know the Negro less. They regard him as more alien, and I think in some segments of society, particularly what you might call the hippie class, well, they probably would become more thoroughly integrated. It could bring about a splitting off of more of a class among whites in the South. I think this could happen.
Do you think this hostility is greater among students in private schools who go to segregated schools or students in public schools?
Quite
white
the contrary.
Students.
Quite the contrary. I can give you an example. The Jackson Citizens Council, last year sponsored a contest, really not a contest so much as a program among our schools, give a prize to the student who best exemplified the ideals of a citizens' council, which was states' rights and racial integrity, the motto. It was left up to the faculties or a faculty committee at each of our 5 12 grade schools here in Jackson to select student candidates whom they thought exemplify those qualities just from their observation. 5 students chosen were then interviewed by a committee of 3. I was not on the committee. And they were asked the same questions to try to give some kind of consistency and fairness to the interview. This was an interesting result. They were all seniors. 2 of them had been in council schools since they began in 1964. Practically all of their conscious school career had been in council schools. 3 had been recently transferred from public schools, so that I think 1 had had 2 years with us and the others had had 1 year, or were in their first year. Students who had spent their entire school career with the council schools had a vague idea of what it was about. They understood in general terms, but not, they couldn't really articulate it. The others were blunt and pointed, the ones from public schools, and demonstrated an attitude that was far more hardened than the ones who'd been in council schools. And when you reflect on that, it's easy to understand why.
But how about the students, though, who remain in the private schools? I mean, those students who remain in the public schools and remain in daily contact with blacks?
Well, some, I think, accept it, and I think some resent it.
You'd mentioned earlier you thought students were becoming more like the North because of isolation from and lack of contact with blacks. That's why I asked the question, that it would seem.
I mean, lack of contact in the way that we used to know that term. There's not the friendliness or the courtesy or code of behavior that used to exist between black and white. We see in children whose parents bring them in here to enroll them in our schools, some of them who are almost in a psychotic state, who've been robbed, blackmailed periodically, had the lunch money stolen, physically intimidating. Now that sort of exposure, regardless of how much physical presence you have, leads, I think, to a psychological withdrawal.
How do you recruit your faculties?
Well, we select from those who apply. We have a great many more applicants than we have positions. They're primarily people who have taught in public schools, although we have a fair sprinkling of new teachers who come to the private schools for the first teaching experience. But naturally, the majority of faculty are experienced middle-aged teachers who've been in public schools practically all their careers. Interestingly enough, when the teachers leave ahead of the students, when massive integration occurs in a public school.
Are your salaries equivalent to those in the public schools?
No. Less.
how about retirement?
Well, we, a couple of years ago, instituted a retirement program, or tried to. We got it all worked up along with a group insurance program. And our teachers, by and large, were not too enthusiastic about it. They wanted the group insurance, most of them, but they didn't want retirement. They wanted that salary increase. The reason for it, and we frankly were a little surprised at this reaction, but when we delved into it, we began to understand it a little more fully. Teachers, classroom teachers, by and large, are not heads of families, and they're not as much interested in retirement as a family head. Most of the teachers nowadays, typical teachers, a youngish married woman whose job is a second family job. It's not the primary source of family income. So a husband would be the one more interested in retirement than she. For that reason, we didn't pursue it. But we were prepared to institute one if there had been sufficient interest.
We've been told by some people that 10 years ago, the Citizens Council exerted far more political influence in Mississippi than it does today. Would you agree with that?
Possibly.
What is the level of political influence of the council?
I frankly don't know. We have not been too active. We opposed some legislation, and we have consistently. One's a public school, a rather compulsory school attendance law. We've opposed that.
Why have you opposed compulsory school attendance law?
Well, two reasons. One, among others, one is that we're against it as a violation of individual rights. I think it's undue interference with the rights of individuals. Another is that there's a little more technical reason, but we think it extends, it poses a certain legal threat to the existence of private schools, in that it tends to bring state action. Private schools are safer from federal management, let's say, than if there were public school, than if there were compulsory school attendance laws. For example, there's a lawsuit in Florida filed in, I believe it was Tampa. Would you like some coffee, Mr. Bass?
I have some cream and sugar, please.
Mr. DeVries? I don't call all my secretaries. I'm just this one. I'm married to her. Makes a difference.
Can I ask you, say the council's goals are stated?
Well, in this lawsuit that I mentioned, the existence of compulsory school attendance law in Florida was cited as one of the grounds for bringing suit. The fact that the law provided that attendance at a licensed, regulated private school was compliance with the law, and this gives a little thread to hang on. It may be thin, but we'd rather avoid such threats if possible. That's our primary reason. Although actually, if one would take a short-sighted, more self-centered look, the enactment and enforcement of a compulsory school attendance law would help the private schools.
What do you see as individual
public schools hordes of unmanageable blacks who run more whites out? That's what would happen.
In view of the fact, I think the other 49 states have compulsory attendance laws. What do you think is the individual right that would be infringed?
Well, I think it's involuntary servitude. Incidentally, there's been a consistent view growing in educational circles that it's a failure. Compulsory attendance laws, by and large, are not strictly enforced, although occasionally you hear parents being put in jail. You know, there was a case of the Amish in Pennsylvania who wanted to educate their own children. Some parents were put in jail for that.
They say the goal of the council is racial integrity. And when you translate it in practical terms, it means that in the school system, it's all white, right?
As far as we're concerned, yes.
Why? What is the theory behind racial integrity? Does mixing blacks with whites, is that just something about the race?
There are a couple aspects of it. One is, and I think the most important, is that I think each racial group or religious group has a right to exercise its own preference. If it wants to associate with its own kind, then I think that's sufficient reason enough. And that, incidentally, is that concept, you know, is very deeply ingrained in the whole formation of our country. Pragmatically, there are very sound educational reasons for this. Jackson, Mississippi, and Washington, D.C., another example, had two of the best separate school systems in the nation, judged by educational results, prior to integration. Now they've got two of the worst. In the black school system here, The achievement level of the blacks here was almost 2 years above the national norm for blacks. And there was extensive testing done, and the thought was that something was wrong with the tests. But closer investigation proved that the black principals and teachers had adopted educational methods that were suited to their students, and they were getting excellent results. Their achievement level has dropped, and so has the whites since integration.
The achievement levels have dropped because
they perform differently, they learn differently, they relate to their teachers differently if they're of different race. And to me, integration's been such a crashing failure, and the other was so successful that there hardly seems room for much argument about it, which works better.
That suggests there ought to be a governmental policy then that maintains the separation of the two?
Well, I don't think it's necessary to do that. I think that the force of nature would bring it about. If the element of governmental coercion were left out of it,
is it permanent?
I am absolutely convinced. I become more convinced every day that if the gerrymandering of school districts and the busing of children were abandoned, that you would see a natural resegregation of the schools in this country. And I know it would happen here.
But that's based on social class, isn't it? Not a function of
I think it's based on preference, on how whatever other description you give it would be preference.
Don't you generally find that as you move up the socioeconomic class, that the behavior problems are less, the motivation is higher for learning and so on, and that if you were to raise economic levels and so on?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know, Mr. DeVries. I don't know. seems to be a point at which deterioration sets in, because
But generally,
most of the drug problems in the schools here are upper class and not lower class.
If that were to happen, if the end of busing and gerrymandering and a resegregation of the schools, at least so that they would be basically segregated. You're not talking about total segregation.
No, I'm not talking about legal segregation, but I think there would be substantial.
If that were to happen, would that result in the collapse of the private school movement?
Oh, I don't know if it would result in a collapse. I think it would tend to eliminate the need for them.
I'm sorry.
I think it would lessen the demand. I don't think there's any question.
But the resegregation would be based on housing patterns, right? If you went back to the neighborhood, which is essentially an economic matter, an economic variable.
That would certainly be a great influence.
That's the way I was trying to tie economics to the behavior and discipline and the motivation. I think there's some kind of relationship there.
I think there's a definite relationship, but there again, it's a matter of choice. I think people choose to live where they like to live.
Do the private schools operate a bus system for transportation?
Some do. We have, in the council schools, we have several buses that we use primarily for shuttle purposes. We use for athletic trips. A certain amount of bus transportation is used by students in getting to school. We ourselves don't operate those, but a couple of private operators do.
Do you have a fair number of students who actually travel farther to get to the private schools than they would if they went to the public schools?
I'm quite sure of that.
When opposition arises to busing, in your opinion, is it a question of the distance traveled or is it a question of the destination of the bus?
I think it's the destination of the bus. But busing had become one of these code words, like law and order. And we don't necessarily confine ourselves to the use of code words. We like to think we're a little more candid than that. We object to